just a day. Long ago in
where spiders spin pure webs ablaze. I will take you there with me, and together forever we will be in the land of no return. Like Peter Pan, we'll live and learn.
The date is March 4th, 2022, and after years of deliberation, both Georgia and Bosnia and Herzegovina have officially been accepted as full NATO partners. Ukraine now reinvigorates its push for NATO membership, while Russia has for the last 6 months warned of military action. Alarmed by what it views as encroachment of NATO on its borders, Russia at last responds to the accession of Bosnia and Herzegovina and Georgia by massing forces on its western border. Russia is gambling that the other NATO nations will reconsider admitting the two new members, or at least not be willing to go to war over the defense of brand new members to the alliance. Russia, however, has completely underestimated the solidarity of the alliance, realizing that NATO is in essence a worthless entity unless Article 5 of the treaty is immediately enforced. NATO warns Russia that an attack on one ally is considered an attack on all allies. To reinforce the point, NATO troops are sent into Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, the alliance's most vulnerable members given their direct proximity to Russia. Russia, however, sees this as an unacceptable show of force, and the move proves to be the straw that breaks the camel's back. Without warning, Russian armor pours into Latvia and Lithuania, linking up with forces in Kaliningrad. World War III has officially begun. For the first month of fighting, Russian forces push as far west as Poland, but the offensive grinds to a halt as NATO members finish mobilizing and their resistance solidifies. With American troops and equipment making landfall in France and Germany, NATO is now launching vicious counterattacks against Russia's forces in Poland. In the Pacific, the American Navy steams towards Russia's eastern coast, bringing with it a Marine Expeditionary Force meant to open a second front in the war and split Russia's forces. Russia is faced with a losing proposition and decides to gamble. It authorizes a single nuclear strike against Berlin, betting that while European NATO members may retaliate with their limited nuclear arsenals, the Americans won't risk the destruction of their cities to support their European allies. The date is now April 12th, 0205 hours Zulu. American and Chinese infrared recon satellites both pick up the telltale fiery plume of an ICBM launch from a missile farm in the south of Russia. 2 minutes later, the American president is awoken from his sleep and given the news. Russia has launched a single nuclear device, unknown payload, likely target in Western Europe. The U.S. Air Force's Global Strike Command has for weeks been flying nuclear alert missions with its fleet of B-52 bombers, maintaining a nuclear-armed force in the air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, as its predecessor, the Strategic Air Command, once did for decades during the Cold War. With the detected launch of a Russian nuclear weapon, a priority flash is immediately dispatched to the airborne forces and alert forces on the ground. Flight crews stationed overseas in Japan, on the west coast of the United States, and in Europe all review their single integrated operational plan, which lays out the exact flight route, refueling track, and targets for each of the bomber crews. Most aircraft have 2 primary targets, with 2 alternate targets to be struck should they be unable to make it to their primary targets. Within minutes, the crews are in the air, and those already on alert patrols immediately set their course for the positive control turnaround point, a pre-planned point near Russia where the air crews will automatically turn around unless they receive an order to strike. At missile sites across the American Midwest, the giant concrete shutters that protect the buried missiles inside their launch facilities are automatically rolled back, and the security forces personnel tasked with defending those sites go on full alert. Their orders are to defend the silos until every missile has been launched, after which they are to escort surviving missile crews out and back to a rendezvous point well away from the missile farm. For these sites will be a priority target for incoming Russian missiles. Inside underground bunkers, missile operators rehearse launch procedures, each man responsible for a group of missiles. The entire system only requires 2 out of 4 of the operators to authenticate a launch order, just in case 2 of the men get cold feet about launching a nuclear Armageddon and refuse their orders. Deep in the Arctic, Pacific, and Atlantic Ocean, the U.S.'s extremely low-frequency communication system flashes a nuclear alert to America's ballistic missile submarine fleet. Each sub carries 24 Trident missiles, and each missile carries up to 8 independently targetable warheads with a yield of 475 kilotons. America's fleet of hunter-killer attack submarines have for weeks been stalking and eliminating Russia's aging ballistic missile submarines, and the survivors are bottled up near the Russian shore where they can be protected with shore-based firepower and anti-submarine patrols. Now, America's attack submarines set course for Russia's coast, and their mission is to eliminate Russia's surviving nuke boats, though it will cost America's submarine fleet dearly, as Russia's Air Force and Surface Navy fiercely defend their surviving ballistic missile subs. At 0209 hours, the American president is told that the American recon assets have positive confirmation of a nuclear detonation in Berlin. The Russians have fired an older single-warhead ICBM, yet with a yield large enough to completely destroy the city of 3.6 million. On a hotline direct with the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, the president is told that Britain is already issuing a fire order to retaliate for the attack. The president knows that the attack on Berlin was a gamble by the Russians, who don't believe that the U.S. will risk an escalation and attacks on its own cities to defend Europe. An emergency flash is dispatched by the U.S.'s ELF communication system to a lurking Ohio-class submarine currently on station deep beneath the ice of the North Pole. After authenticating the order, the sub breaches through the 5-foot-thick ice and the door on a single dorsally mounted launch tube props open. The navigation system on the Trident II missile located inside the launch tube is activated, and a mission trajectory is automatically loaded into the flight computer. Then, a steam generator ignites a solid-grain rocket motor, which feeds superheated exhaust into a tank of chilled water. The water evaporates and expands, forcing the missile within the launch tube to be launched upwards and out, after which the first stage motor ignites and the missile screams upward and towards space. An astro-inertial guidance system on board the missile uses star positioning to fine-tune the accuracy of its trajectory, as GPS has long been unreliable due to Russian attacks on NATO satellites. The Russians have bet wrong, and minutes later, 8 475-kiloton warheads detonate over the Russian missile facility which launched the Berlin attack. Simultaneously, a British attack strikes the cities of Ekaterinburg and Novosibirsk, with a population of 1.5 million or 3 million together. NATO has responded in kind to the Berlin attack, and America has both punished Russia's nuclear forces for the attack and shown that it will stand with its allies. In the halls of the Kremlin, a desperate power struggle plays out. 3 million Russians lie dead, and the U.S. has obliterated one of Russia's major nuclear missile facilities, destroying dozens of ICBMs in place. Russian ballistic submarines, considered to be the most survivable element of the nuclear triad, have also been decimated by American attack submarines, though the U.S. has lost 12 subs of its own in its quest to eliminate the remaining Russian boats. Military leadership clashes with the civilian leadership and demands a retaliatory attack on American missile facilities. With U.S. reinforcements in force on the Western Front and Russia Russians starting to lose ground in Poland, battlefield commanders have for the last week been requesting a release on strategic nuclear weapons to use against American infantry and tanks. The fierce debate on the use of tactical weapons is reignited, and when further nuclear attacks are denied, Russian military leadership stages a stunning coup. The Russian president is removed from power, and Russian commanders receive authorization for the use of a dozen tactical weapons against NATO forces in Europe. Within a half hour, NATO troop concentrations in Poland are hammered by low-yield nuclear attacks, killing tens of thousands. American reinforcements fresh from the States and currently massing around the Ramstein military facilities in Germany are hit with three tactical devices. The Marine Expeditionary Force in the Pacific, staging out of Japan, is also struck by a single device, as are the two naval carrier battle groups supporting the invasion. By 9 a.m., American military forces have suffered more casualties than all wars since World War II combined, and the ability for NATO to push back Russian forces in Poland is eliminated. While Russia has maintained an inventory of low-yield tactical nuclear weapons to counter America's overwhelming conventional firepower advantage, the United States has not kept an active inventory of tactical devices for decades. This leaves the American president with few options for a comparable retaliatory attack. While the yields on America's airborne submarine and ground-launched nuclear devices can be dialed down, there's no way to broadcast that fact to the Russians, and little chance they'd believe it. An attack with traditional ICBMs, submarine-launched missiles, or airborne nuclear cruise missiles will seem to Russia like a full-blown attack and risk escalating the war into a total nuclear confrontation. Yet the president has little choice. Tens of thousands of American service members are dead. U.S. forces in Europe have been badly damaged by the attacks, and both carrier battle groups supporting the Pacific invasion are reporting major losses of ships, aircraft, and personnel. The Marine Invasion Force in Okinawa is combat ineffective, four divisions reporting over 55% casualties each. Resigning himself to a list of terrible options, the president orders a retaliatory attack using ground-based ICBMs. The Air Force's Global Strike Command nuclear bomber fleet is to approach and hold at their failsafe points, ready to proceed to their targets should Russia retaliate again. At Minot Air Force Base in North Dakota, a launch order is authorized by the two-man Minuteman launch crew, and a single Minuteman III missile roars into the night sky. 60 seconds later, the second stage of the missile ignites, separating from the spent first booster stage. Adjustments using the second stage thrust vector control keeps the missile on its course, and another 60 seconds later, the flight computer separates the second stage and fires the engine on the third and final stage. By now, the missile has reached space, and as the third stage engine burns out, reverse thrust separates the three warheads and their penetration aids from the launch vehicle. Some of the penetration aids explode, showering space with millions of pieces of reflective aluminum, which wreak havoc on radar used by missile interceptors, while other aids simulate the real warheads and serve as dummy targets for any Russian interceptors. With no real Russian anti-ballistic missile defense programs, though, the warheads and the dummies all re-enter the Earth's atmosphere completely unharmed. 23 minutes after launch, three separate 475-kiloton nuclear explosions rock Eastern Europe. Russian forces in Poland are obliterated by two nuclear strikes many times greater in magnitude than those used against NATO forces, while yet another Russian nuclear missile facility is struck by the third warhead. With American weapons targeting their missile fields and systematically eliminating Russia's ability to respond to nuclear attacks, the final order is given for a full-blown nuclear response. American reconnaissance satellites and electronic eavesdropping assets all pick up the telltale signs of preparatory operations for a nuclear launch across Russia's remaining missile farms. The order to attack is mirrored in the U.S., and launch officers in North Dakota, Wyoming, and Montana receive the order to launch. America's overwhelming conventional firepower advantage, the United States has not kept an active inventory of tactical devices for decades. This leaves the American president with few options for a comparable retaliatory attack. While the yields on America's airborne, submarine, and ground-launched nuclear devices can be dialed down, there's no way to broadcast that fact to the Russians, and little chance they'd believe it. An attack with traditional ICBMs, submarine-launched missiles, or airborne nuclear cruise missiles will seem to Russia like a full-blown attack and risk escalating the war into a total nuclear confrontation. Yet the president has little choice. Tens of thousands of American service members are dead. U.S. forces in Europe have been badly damaged by the attacks, and both carrier battle groups supporting the Pacific invasion are reporting major losses of ships, aircraft, and personnel. The Marine Invasion Force in Okinawa is combat ineffective. Four divisions reporting over 55% casualties each. Resigning himself to a list of terrible options, the president orders a retaliatory attack using ground-based ICBMs. The Air Force's Global Strike Command nuclear bomber fleet is to approach and hold at their failsafe points, ready to proceed to their targets should Russia retaliate again. At Minot Air Force Base in North Dakota, a launch order is authorized by the two-man Minuteman launch crew, and a single Minuteman III missile roars into the night sky. 60 seconds later, the second stage of the missile ignites, separating from the spent first booster stage. Adjustments using the second stage thrust vector control keeps the missile on its course, and another 60 seconds later, the flight computer separates the second stage and fires the engine on the third and final stage. By now, the missile has reached space, and as the third stage engine burns out, reverse thrust separates the three warheads and their penetration aids from the launch vehicle. Some of the penetration aids explode, showering space with millions of pieces of reflective aluminum, which wreak havoc on radar used by missile interceptors, while other aids simulate the real warheads and serve as dummy targets for any Russian interceptors. With no real Russian anti-ballistic missile defense programs, though, the warheads and the dummies all re-enter the Earth's atmosphere completely unharmed. 23 minutes after launch, three separate 475-kiloton nuclear explosions rock Eastern Europe. Russian forces in Poland are obliterated by two nuclear strikes many times greater in magnitude than those used against NATO forces, while yet another Russian nuclear missile facility is struck by the third warhead. With American weapons targeting their missile fields and systematically eliminating Russia's ability to respond to nuclear attacks, the final order is given for a full-blown nuclear response. American reconnaissance satellites and electronic eavesdropping assets all pick up the telltale signs of preparatory operations for a nuclear launch across Russia's remaining missile farms.
Yeah. is brought to you in living color on NBC.
Responsibility only to oneself. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of pleasure. The new Declaration of Independence for the teenager around the world. Then when it starts to fade, the old world returns to what it was. Come over to a similar apartment in the village. Smoke a joint, burn a little grass. Pot party, roach party, mainliner, skin popping, shoot some crystal. The language of the narcotic and marijuana user. The language of a large and ever-increasing number of teens. Starting in high school on Benzedrine and Dexedrine pep pills, it is not long before many soon graduate to marijuana, the teething biscuits to a whole generation of adolescent psychics. And if marijuana is the appetizer, the advent of the space-age technology has provided the main course. Lysergic acid diethylamide, LSD, the crazy acid. To use it is to take a trip in the world of mystique, religion, and self-knowledge. For others, it is a trip to the emergency ward of the nearest psychiatric hospital. For some, it accentuates the beat. For some, it quickens sexual desire. For some, it is the release of sexual inhibitions. But whatever it is, teenagers are going for it. A drug that can be made in the kitchen sink is hard to stop. May be the forerunner of a new drug society out of some science fiction writer's imagination.
Will drugs pave the road to destruction? for the now generation.
Acid.
No, I'm not a pusher, I'm a dealer. There's a world of difference. A pusher's only in it for the money. He sells bad stuff like speed, addicting stuff like heroin. There's drugs and there's drugs, you know. The dealer sells head dope mostly, like grass and hash and acid. Look, I like turning people on. It's a nice thing to do for them, you know, but I just can't afford to do it for free.
Would you turn me on?
If you want.
I want.
Are you sure?
Please.
Okay. We can do up right now. Have you ever done up before?
Nope. That's hash.
Mm-hmm. Hashish. It's the resin from the marijuana plant. It's like grass, but it doesn't take as much to get you high.
It's not addicting, is it?
No. But if your world's a bummer, you might be tempted to stay stoned all the time as an escape. It works that way for some people. Or it might seem to help you do some things better. Like seeing or writing poetry or making love, and you might believe you can't do those things straight after a while. And some of us like the way it changes our thinking and our perception so much that without it, we figure we'd probably just slide back into being straight again. Never know the difference. That's why some people are into meditation and yoga and things, for natural highs. Here. Breathe it right in. Hold it down. Hold it right in.
What's supposed to happen? How'll I know when I'm stoned?
You'll know.
We'll be right back.
science saw such things I've never seen before. It was strange. There was a table upside down with no legs and a funny colored pink. There wasn't any chairs, so I sat on the edge of a sink. I had tea in a crock and I ate a piece of green wall. It was strange. Was I just imagining, or was this really happening to me? Perhaps it's just a funny dream, but to me it seems so real. Open feeling in my mind, I'm in a trance, oh I must be. Up the stairs to the cellar, which was on the top floor. I went down the stairs to the attic, which was on the floor before. I landed in the garden. All I did was a mystery to me. It was strange. I walked down the garden path, found myself sitting on a bed. It was suspended in midair, with no springs, not even any legs. So I laid my head down, went to sleep, hoping I would disappear. It was strange.
In his house.
I'm back riding in the sky near my home.